On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Joe Zook, who's an operating partner at Ultimate Capital Partners, a private equity firm with over $4 billion under management, and financial services, including insurance, is a key focus, definitely for Joe. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate the opportunity to be on today.
Yeah, well, you're everywhere on LinkedIn and post a lot of interesting takes on things from conferences that I've seen. And I think our paths have crossed different times in the past. So we thought it was time to have you on, especially all that's going on in insurtech world and all of the change that's going on with AI and so forth. But first, tell us a little bit about you, Joe. Where are you from originally? Where were you born? And what led you to where you're at today?
Oh, appreciate it. So I was born and raised in Los Angeles, native Californian. Came out to New York City thinking I wanted to go on and into Wall Street. So attended and graduated NYU. After my first semester and first year at NYU, ended up meeting my girlfriend who became my wife and didn't want to leave New York to go back to LA, wanted to find an internship and called my uncle, who was a CEO of a publicly traded company called Skippy, which was a MedMal insurance underwriter out in California. And he said, I could help get you a job with an investment bank at the time, Credit Suisse First Boston. But he said, you might want to call these guys called reinsurance brokers. And he said, it's like investment banking, but for the insurance business. And frankly, Peter, I had no idea what reinsurance was, but I said, oh, sounds good. But here was the key line when I was 19 years old. He said, like, they make pretty good money. They seem to have a lot of fun and they don't quite work as hard as investment bankers. So it could work out well. I was like, sounds good. So he lined me up with interviews with Aon Willis and Carpenter at the time. And I took an internship with Willis Re in that summer.
Mm. So what was it like? What were some things you learned as in that world? And does it even relate to what you're doing today? There's got to be some. You must have some great stories about the past with certain characters who were in those circles for sure. But maybe they're on a serious note. Reinsurance is a key part of what makes it all tick around the world, the industry, the backup that's required for big stuff and little stuff. But what did you learn on the broking side of all that?
it was great. Honestly, it was a great foundational and fundamental experience for me. I got exposed to both treaty and FAC, and the Willis Re New York office at the time in 2003 had certainly some legendary folks in it, and industry luminaries as well. So I got exposed and didn't even know who I was really getting exposed to at the time. Mm-hmm. But what I learned was certainly just kind of how reinsurance permeated every aspect of not only insurance, but the greater economy was one real key fundamental lesson. Two, getting curious about and interested in learning about underlying industries, really what sync with me in terms of the reinsurance arena. And then the difference between treaty and FAC and learning how things come from a portfolio level to facultative, which is truly a fielder's choice and individual risk underwriting, was super fascinating to me at the time. And, I did some very basic things that don't even exist in an office anymore, like, fax submissions to underwriters, because email was still fairly novel, and some underwriters took fax versus email, certainly for the size constraints we had. And was putting together bordereaux manually with London, and had a good friend who is my correspondent broker. We were doing line slip work and putting together simple exposure and experience information exhibits. Was a good fundamental foundational learning lesson for me.
And then what happened after that? Where'd you go after working there?
Well, I got very fortunate. So I interned that summer, and they said, "Hey, we don't have a lot of young people. And since we were pretty impressed with you, would you like to come and work part time in the fall and go to school? And we'll work around your school schedule." So that's what I did. And then my boss at the time left to start another in January of 2004, another intermediary called John B. Collins Associates, or Collins, which subsequently got acquired by Guy Carpenter. And they presented me an offer to work full time and go to school at night. So that's what I did. Funnily enough, they actually had to change the 401k plan for me because you technically had to be 21 or over. And so I was 19 years old, working full time and wearing a suit in class at NYU. It was good, but accelerated my maturity and growth and development. And that's where I went. So I went worked at Collins, and then after that, we were selling to Guy Carpenter. I said, "You know what? I want to try my hand at the underwriting side," and had a great offer to join Paris Re. And with Paris Re, I joined as a property facultative reinsurance underwriting, books of business in North America, and a little bit of global exposures. And that was really where I got to really understand how the underwriting side of the equation came together for a couple of years. And then I went back to the broking side for both Lockton and BMS. And then after about a decade in reinsurance, I had a great opportunity and saw where the MGA program space was emerging, and joined Atlas General, a managing general agent based out of San Diego, California, at the end of 2013. There, I ran corporate development and strategy, and then also built out their commercial and property insurance verticals and led those as well. After about 5.5 years, I joined Orchid Underwriters to read corporate development strategy for them in 2019. And then at the end of 2019, I joined Altamont as an operating partner, where I've been for the last 6 years, and enjoy it today. So that's a quick thumbnail sketch of my career.
Very cool that you learned different sides of the business, and I'm sure that helps you today. So what are you doing now? Like, what's your role there? Are you investing in certain types of companies, startups as well as established, or how does that all
It's a
work?
great question. So as an operating partner, I get to have one set foot alongside our investing principals on everything new and existing we do in financial services, specifically insurance. And then the other foot is alongside our executive and senior management teams of our portfolio companies here at Altamont, where I like to say I get to go play offense every day. And that can take a variety of different things. Peter, one day it can be recruiting for a specific role. The other could be evaluating an acquisition, an add-on. And then other things can be more mundane, like using the Rolodex and setting up some strategic meetings for a new growth aperture for one of our portfolio companies. I love it because I get to never be bored doing the same thing, and I get to challenge my mind and my skill sets to solve problems daily and really accelerate the value creation across our portfolio companies. And then I get exposed to a great flow of new investment opportunities we consider here at Altamont.
Your story, Joe, is really cool because I was in the city late 80s, early 90s for about 7 years working around the insurance. I worked at the Insurance Information Institute near the World Trade Center. So we used to go to the same clubs. All the clubs that the underwriters and brokers would go to. The College of Insurance was down there, just getting started really in earnest, and all this stuff was going on in the industry and the suit and tie. I certainly remember those days. But what's interesting about your story is just that the twists and turns that it took, and it just demonstrates again the incredible opportunity we have in the insurance industry as just like a place to work with, just to do any about anything. Once you get in, it kind of hooks you, doesn't it?
It does. It's a very addicting and fun industry. I see it as a puzzle every day, right? And it's infinitely fascinating.
You're working. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with InsurTech from your view, because I know you're out there. I know you're always posting on things. Well, give us a synopsis. We're still early in 2026. Is there a category you're very bullish on? You mentioned MGAs, the wholesale world. That has just absolutely exploded the last couple of decades. There's a lot of factors, not the least of which is government regulations and the state level. But where are you seeing? And I made a list here. I just figured you're involved in all of this stuff, or at least evaluating it. What's going on in the parametric world, blockchain, AI, this is having an incredible impact. You go to those InsurTech shows. What are you seeing? Can you give us a little insight here?
Yeah, no, great question. I mean, well, we're seeing a lot of different things. I think, vendors starting to participate in augmented underwriting. So can you pull down third-party data? Can you bring risk fidelity, granularity to the underwriter, or same on the claim side to the claims adjuster and TPA? That's one thing. Two is what I'll call kind of the data organizers. So it's folks in the LLM space who are helping to organize foundational data for various constituents throughout the insurance value chain. And then we're starting to see some interesting businesses in, what I'll call kind of predictive AI. So that's in climate, weather tech, which is pretty interesting, even liability, where they're looking at various data in the legal space and trying to predict the likelihood of a claim for a particular class or a type of insured. So a lot of exciting areas. And then there's certainly more of the what I'll call category disruptors, where there's folks still working to maybe disrupt the value chain in terms of being more direct or truncating the value chain in a certain way through the use of AI or technology. So there's been I would say, after what appeared to be a bit of a lull in AI and technology, or sorry, I should say InsurTech, over the past couple of years, seem to see a resurgence over the last year or so. And then, of course, the MGA and the program sector remains quite active and quite hot.
Yeah. So do you think, so when I went to InsurTech Connect, I noticed there was a lot of AI. Well, there was a ton of AI stuff there, but it didn't it there were many of them that sounded like they were just sort of using the term and putting on their exhibit booths and their URLs and things, just to make it look like we're AI. And I'm sure everybody's got to try this. This is what people want to talk about and want to learn about. But there are, and I know you've seen the difference. The brand new ones that are using AI is like that's the mothership. We're starting with that. We're not trying to change something we've done for 5 years. Am I correct there? Are you seeing the difference?
I'm seeing a difference between, AI used as a true tool, maybe around just organization and organizing underlying data and thoughts or augmenting. And then, I am also seeing folks that are doing more frontier work with truly predictive, which is more of a combination of like physics and science, and maybe deep tech. Combined with the use of the large language models or the creation of their own foundational models.
Yeah, there are some really interesting things going on in the weather world, trying to get a sense of what's going to happen with all of these storms and big disasters. How can we get ahead of it? How can we continue to provide property insurance for people down the road? I've seen that some very clever things in the marketplace right now around the weather, and also maybe changing the conversation. And again, this is their vision. This kind of insurtech is to make it more of a partnership with the policyholders, that it's not just us versus them. Because this gets to the insurance industry reputation of not paying claims, and a partnership where there's a bit more or a lot more risk management involved in preventing claims in the first place. I imagine, especially with your California connections, you're seeing that as well, right?
That's right. I was actually in Los Angeles last week at an investor conference, and I took a meeting offsite through a mutual friend. And one of the neat meetings that I had there was around risk mitigation and climate change and what they were doing in the wildfire space, which I thought was really, really interesting. And they built a prototype house, which was like an Iron Man house, for a lack of a better phrase, but had like automated sprinklers and shutters and all these really neat features. And what they were trying to do was start to combine parametric covers with indemnity covers, and really trying to get more stability in the cost of insurance for homeowners, which is vital in California, even in areas that were, impacted by wildfire, but some areas that weren't. And even some of the things that may not be as needed for more of the less prone wildfire areas, but are just good risk mitigation that could bring stability and capacity to the market. It was quite fascinating, quite interesting. So there's lots of folks working on that. And I think Florida led the industry after their 04, 05 hurricanes and better building standards. And you're starting to see California and other parts of the country catch up on that.
So is there, if you, I know you're close to a lot of what's going on, but if you were to sort of zoom out for a second and look at the big picture, are there things about all of this digital transformation in the insurance industry that people misunderstand? And are there, is it a matter of like just getting past the hype of it all? Because I think, let's face it, we're like the last industry, or got to be one of the last industries, to sort of get on this wave of we got to change things. This is like crazy how we do. You mentioned some of it with all the different ways that information is collected for underwriting, for example, and claims. But is there something that's going on that people are misreading, misunderstanding in your mind?
Yeah, I think a few things. One, folks think AI is going to be a panacea to everything. We still work in a very heavily regulated industry that has a strong consumer constituents in terms of personal lines. And on the commercial line side, that is very price sensitive, right? And that also is very data poor. Well, and so data quality poor, I should say, right? It's data rich, but data quality poor. And I think there's a lot of folks going around and saying, hey, let's just slap AI onto everything and surely that's going to be the panacea or fix. When what I'm really worried about is a lot of loss of institutional knowledge, and some of the more foundational and fundamental elements of underwriting and risk selection and risk management Some of the core tenets of aggregation management are absolutely crucial. And then let's not forget the relationship aspect of it. I mean, what are we actually really selling here? Peter in insurance, right? We're selling a promise to pay, right? On a piece of paper. Yes, it's a legal contract and so forth, but there's a big trust element of that. And I don't see that going quickly away, nor do I see the concierge aspect of the retail producer or the wholesale broker who's depending, who's being depended on to provide knowledge of what types of exposure maybe a restaurateur has or a dry cleaner or a bodega, right? And so, I think that remains durable. But can AI and data really help close the talent gap? Can it help augment the various elements of the value chain? And can it actually bring better pricing, more responsive product, and even create new products and coverages that might be more valuable to the end consumer? Absolutely, right? And I think that's where folks need to be thinking about the use of AI and technology going forward. But it's certainly not just the immediate margin enhancer or revenue enhancer. I do think it probably has more of an impact on the expense side sooner rather than later. But there's still a lot of wood to chop.
Yeah, I love all the metaphors and analogies. That's good. Maybe it could have worked in the media, with telling some stories. So when I remember when insurtech first became a thing, and again, this is like after fintech and medtech and edtech and everything. So insurtech was started, I don't know what it was, Joe, 15 years ago or 12 or whatever it is now. And they were talking about disruption was the big word. We don't need agents and brokers. This is going to be a direct-to-consumer play. They were talking about basically becoming an insurance company, whether it was just for like BOP policies or whatever they were trying to do, personal lines. And then it was like this rebound. They're like, oh, wait a minute. There's a lot of regulations in the insurance industry. We just learned about all that. And then you got the ratings. It's the NAIC. You have all this infrastructure. However, so what they wound up doing is get into like the MGA world, the intermediary space. And, some of them did okay. A lot of them didn't. But I'm wondering what you're seeing now. I think you alluded to it earlier that there's some direct stuff happening. And I question, this is not Joe talking, this is me. I feel like the standard insurance companies, unless they have some seriously good niches in wholesale, specialty, or just they're just stand above in a certain line above the competition, that they're the ones who could be in trouble. There's 2,000 P&C companies in the U.S. Are we headed towards a future where that traditional carrier model is under more pressure than ever? Do you think? I'm just speculating.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, right? I think there's some durable moats that insurers, reinsurers truly have in terms of not only from regulators, but also rating agencies as well, and certainly cross-jurisdiction, cross-border. That being said, I think with the velocity of capital and with AI and technology, you might see some consolidation that starts to incur, and surely the innovation or maybe the dusting off of some older models like reciprocal has been around for quite some time, though it's been flavored du jour for a number of years now, certainly in the personal line space, start to reemerge and maybe some more fresher, newer, modern ways of thinking on how to use those elements and balance sheets. That being said, I think the MGA is a great sandbox and proving ground of some of these balance sheet or balance sheet light entities. And you're seeing it, right, with captives and sidecars, for example, where a number of platform MGAs are starting to do syndicates in the box or special purpose arrangements in Lloyd's, or establishing their own sidecar captive ILS facilities to generate their own stability and capacity, right? So that's relatively new that I would argue you didn't really see, 5, 10 years ago at all.
Well, let me just ask you a little bit about what you look for and if you guys are weighing investing in these companies. Are there certain traits in founders or executives who are more of the winning type, that you find interesting? Because I imagine you've got to balance the numbers with the people, when you're looking, right? Is that a fair statement?
That's right. I mean, one of the things that we always look for is, we underwrite the people first and foremost, right? I think that's one of the most important things that we can do. And then, the business plan and the numbers have to follow that. Do we have a right to win? Is the management team durable? Is there enough addressable market and disruption in the market or something that isn't being fulfilled in the market is really what we look to. And we are patient capital with Altamont, right? The fund lives are 17 years in duration. So one of the important things that we always look for is, we're not trying to just underwrite to a 2 or 3 year outcome and fix and flip. Or try to financially engineer something through an M&A roll-up strategy. It's very much, can we build a durable business throughout the cycle? And are those executives deep enough in their leadership and their ability to attract talent that they can operationally out-execute regardless of the market cycle or technology? For us, that makes an attractive potential investment.
Let me just ask you, as we're getting ready to wrap here, a few questions, maybe more on the rapid fire side and maybe a little bit more on the personal side.
Sure.
What would you say to, because you've been in the business now a long time and you can have a different lens. You've walked in their shoes, the people you're working with, mentoring. What advice would you give someone who's coming into a leadership role in this industry today? Because it's changing all the time. What have you seen that works?
Yeah, it's a great question. When I look at, the leaders of our portfolio companies or the leaders of companies I admire, one of the things that I find most consistent is, one, their ability to communicate, two, empathy, and three, the ability to articulate a vision with an endpoint in mind, and really utilize objectives and key results for their team to get there. So people really understand what they're working towards, and how to build something. And I think one of the lessons I learned in private equity early on as well was, you should build with the end in mind as well. So that means the decisions that you make today will have consequence upon your exit. And I think that's true in leadership as well. And so the ability, that doesn't mean that you don't, pivot or adapt or evolve, but certainly, taking short-sighted thoughts or actions can have real impacts on what the ultimate outcome and value creation is.
Yeah, thanks for that. Joe, can you share something along the way? And maybe it was on a street corner in New York City, maybe somewhere in Los Angeles, or maybe on an airplane. But was there something that happened to you that you might characterize as a quote failure, but it might be like the best thing that's happened?
Oh, good question. I've failed many times in my career. Sometimes, for example, having an overly ambitious vision or idea. Since there's been a technology theme to this conversation today, not really understanding what the capability of the technology or the capability of operationalizing something truly is. And by that I mean, I give you a good example. A couple of years ago, I had this vision of being able to programmatize retail business in a way that, helped them create an MGA or MGU. And I was very ambitious in wanting to be able to really deliver straight through processing at the agency management system level, right at this account executive or CSR's desktop. Well, went headlong, ran, selected a vendor, spent a lot of money, and only to realize that the agency management systems have literally dozens, if not hundreds, of versions. And to actually connect is almost impossible, if not impossible. So, had some egg on my face with some prominent retail brokers in failing to execute that. And that was certainly a humbling experience. And then, had to hit the reset button and see what we could deliver.
Any predictions you've made that came true, Joe? Like you can say, "Hey, man, I thought about that years ago, or even a year ago."
Oh, good question. Well, I would say more directionally, just the ongoing convergence of risk capital getting closer to risk origination, right? And I think we're, was in New York last week as well, and had a meeting with a large asset manager that had, I think, 20 billion under asset management. And they said, look, we want to be closer to the front of the line. And what, can you guys help facilitate that between a hybrid front and an MGA? And they were willing to put a meaningful amount of capital to work in doing that. And that was starting to become kind of at least obvious to me 12, 18 months ago. And I started to realize it at CIAB last year that wow, this is really coming true. And I would say in the last 6 months is the phone is ringing quite a bit of interested parties.
Interesting. I maybe that what you mentioned earlier about the data and the AI around the data just getting cleaner is a way that they could get closer to the action and not be,
I think it's going to be a huge, really important factor, right? For those asset managers to get comfortable. All right. And there's a great use case of data and AI.
And would you say too, Joe, related to that, you're seeing it as well in your old world of reinsurance, that it is the new vehicles available now to people ceding risk are pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, no, we're seeing it in terms of innovative structuring and cat bonds, right? Which used to be the domain of just property, now increasingly growing in casualty, cyber, and then the use of ILS and pre-planned LPTs and the ability to get liquidity and a lot of really innovation going on in the ILS space, beyond what was just considered kind of a property cat cover, is starting to permeate across all lines of business, and that's certainly having a big impact on reinsurance. And then I think you're seeing the traditional reinsurers come up with more responsive covers. Whole account quota share is very popular, and a number of other covers. That reinsurers are really starting to get more comfortable with than they were 23, 24 years ago when I started the business.
Yeah, speaking of those times, you're sitting in class at NYU with your suit on and worrying about what's next, maybe, or maybe had a belief, some beliefs. looking back now, what any advice you'd give that guy sitting in class?
I would say a couple things. One, remain curious. Two, don't be afraid to continue to network and get out there and build relationships and reach out to folks that you don't know and just talk to them and ask them about an aspect of their business, right? Politely and respectfully. And I think three is never stop educating yourself about the industry. I think, widening the aperture of where a particular area that you're focused on in insurance or reinsurance or anything more broadly in commercial financial services, I find that that can certainly expand your horizon, but also have applicability to whatever your job function is at the time. Took me a little while to learn that, but it's certainly served me well and continues to serve me well today.
Yeah, I imagine in your space, you've got to ask good questions. And that, I think Bill Gates said something originally about computers are stupid, they can only give you answers. But asking good questions is key. So you must be getting better at that and probably been in the same meeting 1,000 times where you probably know in the first 5 minutes if this is going to fly or not.
True. I would say there's probably two things. One is pattern recognition for sure. But two, you do get better at asking questions over time and being able to kind of pry into the core, the heart of the matter. Sometimes that's quickly and sometimes it takes more time. That being said, the industry is one that's super friendly and relationship driven. And, I think you can learn a lot by being observant, but also it's the old adage of, there's more said when you're not speaking than when there is, right? Mm-hmm. And so the ability to listen is critically important as well.
Yeah. And touche. That's a good point. And you're right. People in the industry are very, very open to sharing. Just witness all the conferences and competitors can be up on the stage and everybody's got their plugs. They put their plugs in, but I think they're rooting for success. They're rooting for success of a product line or coverage or a new way of doing things. And they're also rooting for the next generation to come in and learn and see just what a great industry it is. So I'm with you on all that.
Got it.
Yep. Joe, thank you, man, for your time. I know you're busy. I hope to see you down the road here this spring or this year, certainly at a conference.
No, likewise, Peter. I really appreciate the time today. It was a pleasure connecting over the pod today and some really great questions. I had a lot of fun. Thanks. You again.
Yeah, thank you. Good luck to you, pal.
Take care.
You too.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Artrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.